Welcome back, Michael Warren Thomas. It's Naturally Green at SaveLife.com, and it is a mild winter so far. My winter sweet still may bloom, a shrub that occasionally blooms, I don't know, maybe a couple, three times every 10 years, something like that maybe. But it's been a few years. Last year we had that really cold weather in the middle of November, and the shrub doesn't like that. Didn't hurt the growth of the shrub, just hurt the flowers, which normally bloom in January. Very unusual shrub. I've heard there's another one in Rochester at a private home. I don't think there's one in Highland Park. My father propagated this one and one other, which didn't make it. But this one's flourished from a small tree that my grandmother had in California, in Northern California. So I'll let you know, maybe next week we'll see whether it blooms. If we get really cold weather in the forecast, I may cut off some of the branches with the flowers, bring them in so they can bloom. But I really want to see whether it will bloom outside normally. It's, I think, a zone 7 shrub, so it's one of the reasons there aren't really any around here, but it's well protected by a fence here in the city of Rochester and our house. So it's got a pretty protected location, and it's another one of those sort of microclimates that can get us to zone 7, perhaps in the city of Rochester. If you live outside the city, maybe closer to zone 5, and you might have a microclimate that would be closer to zone 6 and allow you to grow some things that you've struggled with up till now. And similarly, though, if you have a really exposed area, probably lots of wind, maybe a somewhat low area where cold air tends to settle, that could be a zone 4 or a zone lower than whatever zone you normally are in. So it can vary somewhat around your yard, and I'll let you know if this winter sweet does finally bloom. There are fragrant flowers. They're sort of little bells that hang. So it's not very showy. At my grandmother's house, it would bloom with hundreds of flowers, and it would be incredibly fragrant. You could smell it quite a ways away. Here in our climate, it's more like a few flowers, and so you got to get up right next to them to smell them. But they are very, very sweet. Thanks to one of our listeners, Mark sent me a link to a virtual housewarming tour of Warner Castle. This is where the Rochester Civic Garden Center was located for several decades. And the Landmark Society, well, the Rochester Civic Garden Center decided to shut down, and the county took over the building, the old Warner Castle, and they have renovated it in collaboration with the Landmark Society of Western New York, or maybe it's, I've got to watch the rest of the video to learn more about exactly how that collaboration worked. But the Landmark Society of Western New York is now located there, which probably helped to bring certainly expertise, but also probably grant money and funds to help renovate this beautiful castle. So the Rochester Civic Garden Center did a very nice job keeping the building, keeping it going. It's a very expensive building to operate, and you can see now, I guess it's been, they said, 2 years since the county took over the building. It's in Highland Park. It's across Mount Hope from the cemetery, and it is kind of backs up to the Highland Bowl, which is on South Avenue. So And it looks like a castle. It really does. Built as a private home, it's just kind of a fascinating structure. There's a sunken garden behind it where a lot of wedding photos are taken. Because it's part of Highland Park, there's lots of really cool trees, shrubs, perennials, wildflowers. It's a beautiful grounds to explore. The inside looks pretty amazing, and I can't wait to see it in person. For now, there's a virtual housewarming tour available through the Landmark Society of Western New York's website, and it really looks stunning inside. It's exciting to see, and can't wait to see it in person in the near future. So congratulations to the Landmark Society on all their work, and it's really a treasure for our community to have this place restored, and I'm looking forward to seeing the video. It's about an hour long, and so I've sort of caught little segments of it to see different parts of the building, and some point in the next couple of days, I'll sit down and watch the whole thing. So again, the virtual housewarming tour of Warner Castle is up and available, and you should check it out and share it with friends and family. You should consider becoming a member of the Landmark Society of Western New York, or maybe donating to help them. They really are the key organization in the preservation of our history, which is what makes Rochester unique. And if we don't preserve it, we end up with buildings that look the same as, you know, the rest of the world, rest of the country. I mean, it's really crucial that we maintain our older buildings, and renovations are expensive. Sometimes the building is kind of put on hold until money can be found to fix it, but we are saving these buildings now. We did not save our train station, and the reopening of Penn Station in New York City was kind of a reminder of that era. I think that was also, the original Penn Station was torn down in the 1960s, which is basically when our train station was torn down, and they have reopened Penn Station in the former post office across the street from the original Penn Station. So they did not rebuild, as far as I know, from what I've seen, it didn't rebuild Penn Station, but they have incorporate the history of the building right across the street from the old Penn Station. In our case in Rochester, we just recently rebuilt the train station in the manner of the old one, but and far better than what we had for 30 years as a 30-year temporary train station. But the new station in Rochester is nothing like the original, and we need to preserve these buildings whenever possible. So again, consider joining the Landmark Society, and I've broadcasted from the Warner Castle when it was the Rochester Civic Garden Center. Spent a lot of time there, taught a lot of classes there on horticulture, and lots of fun memories of Warner Castle. So fun to see it. And check out the Landmark Society's website. If you want a link, if you have trouble finding it, let me know. michael@saverlife.com. If you see some plants in bloom, let me know. I don't have any prizes This year we haven't done that first in bloom contest in quite a few years, but I still love to hear about flowers that you find. And it could be a dandelion, you know, or some other wintercress weed, for example, that might be blooming. Might be a primrose or a snowdrop. You're likely to find some of those in bloom somewhere around now. And I haven't done much searching yet, but I need to go check a few locations where sometimes we can find them blooming. And today, a relatively mild day, so perhaps some more of the snow will be gone, and there'll be at least a couple of dandelions somewhere. So take a photo, send it along, or just send me a note about it if you find something in bloom. It helps to make the winter feel shorter. I was checking Cartwright's Maple Tree Inn website just to see what was up with them. They are kind of one of my first signs of spring, in a sense, when they opened in February, and at this point they have not posted. Wonder if they'll be opening this year. They're probably waiting to see what happens as the vaccine rolls out, but the virus numbers keep growing. It's uncertain what they're going to be doing this year, but normally they'd be opening in mid-February and opening through mid-April. So mid-February is a month away, but no announcement from them yet. But the maple sap will run, whether they open or not, will run at some point mid-February, mid-March range, and although it'll be cold in February, somehow the idea that the trees are getting ready, which is what maple syrup production is all about. It's the trees sending the sugars and things up into the tree to get the tree ready to leaf out. And we tap into that. And it doesn't hurt the tree to take that sap. Of course, it would hurt the tree if we took all the sap that it moved up the tree, but we don't. We put a couple spigots in a tree. The bigger the tree, the more spigots, but, you know, maybe 2, 3, 4 spigots. You know, if you put 200 spigots side by side, you could probably severely damage or kill the tree, which would then mean you wouldn't have any next year. And it took, you know, maybe 100 years for that tree to get that big, so that would be kind of a dumb thing to do. So it doesn't hurt the tree, again, it's, for me, it's a sign of spring when the maple sap starts to flow. So that's a ways away, but relatively mild winter so far. There are warnings of the polar vortex. I don't know if that will show up. The long-range forecast keeps us in the 30s. In fact, some upper 30s and maybe 43 this Thursday. So, again, relatively mild winter still, and not really any snow in sight until maybe Friday or Saturday. So it's, again, a mild winter. I was checking out Fruition Seeds website, thinking about what I wanted to grow in 2021, and that's especially with all the political chaos just general chaos that we've been having. Somehow something as simple as reading about a vegetable I want to grow is immensely comforting. And just, you know, a sign of optimism, thinking about what to grow in 2021. So Fruition Seeds has a lot of new plants, all kinds of interesting flowers, herbs, and vegetables. And one of the vegetables that I love the most really any time of the whenever they're available to harvest, sometimes grown in the fall, but usually in the spring, are sugar snap peas. And Fresh and Seeds has organic sugar ann, that's A-N-N, the name, sugar ann dwarf snap pea. It says, always the first pea we harvest each spring. It's the vines are 2 to 3 feet long, so you don't need to trellis them. So containers, it was something that you could maybe put outside on warmer days in March and April and bring inside on the colder days and nights. Their suggestion is that you also plant some full-size snap peas, and then between the two of them, the earlier dwarf and the full-size snap peas, you might end up with 5 or more weeks of snap peas in the spring. So they're easy to grow. They're very dependable, and they just need some sun, which obviously there's very little of right now. If you want to grow these inside, you might get them to bloom. I'm not sure you would be able to get them to produce much of anything unless you have a significant amount of artificial light. I've got to figure out a new location for my my cherry tomato. One of our listeners gave me a tomato plant that he propagated from one he kept inside all winter last winter, and mine is up in my office in the attic, but it doesn't get enough light up here, so I've got to find a spot down and maybe in our dining room to grow this tomato. So it's surviving, and there are a couple tomatoes on it left over from the fall, but I really need to get it more light. And this past week, last 10 days, 2 weeks, has been extremely dark. I mean, I saw some sunshine this morning. It's gone now, unfortunately, but there was some sunshine this morning when the sun first came up, and that was exciting. It was kind of shocking to see this bright light in the sky. We may get a little bit more sun, but not a tremendous amount, and not much in the forecast after today. And the days are short. So in several ways, we are limited in terms of light. So if you want to grow things, other than houseplants and plants like begonias and geraniums that are really pretty adaptable, you probably need some grow lights. And they're pretty easily available. Some of the nurseries like Bristol's Garden Center carry them. Generally, they're used in very limited situations like starting seeds. And so if you use grow lights to start seeds, you usually have the grow lights or the seed bed movable so that you can keep the light within like an inch or two of the plants. And that's harder to do when you have a 3-foot tomato plant that I have up here with me. How do you keep grow lights that close to them? It's really no way to do that. So grow lights are better for specific situations like starting seeds, not as helpful for larger plants. They can help a little bit, but they'll still struggle. My goal is that this tomato survives winter, and I can plant it back outside next summer, or this summer, or the spring, really. Just trying to. I've never kept a tomato all winter long inside. It's it never occurred to me to do that. And thanks to one of our listeners who did that last winter and kind of kept me apprised of the status of the tomato plant, sent photos and things occasionally, and then propagated one that I could keep this winter. I don't think it actually has a variety, or he doesn't know the variety name of it. He named his tomato Tom, and this one is Tom Jr., although it's actually more of a clone propagated from the original Tom, which also remains alive, I think, in his house this winter. So the pressure's on. I've got to keep this tomato alive and got to get it a little bit more light. But sugar snap peas are something you could start growing in late winter indoors as we get more light, as the days get longer. And you might try a few of those seeds even now, just to order some from Fruition Seeds, and they are a local seed company based in Naples. Then you can sort of start to experiment with them. And it really helps my winter go by to have some seeds germinating. And it's just fun to see what the first leaves look like and, how spicy some of these things are. Like if you start radish seeds, those little greens are remarkably spicy. But you can experiment with seeds you already have just to see if they germinate. One of the easy ways and kind of fun to use, I think, are the clamshells that lettuce and spinach and things come in. Those allow you to see the roots. You put in some potting soil. You do have to be careful if you're not going to put drainage holes that you don't overwater them. And they come with a cover to keep in the humidity as the seeds start to germinate. So I always save a few of those to have on hand and experiment with seeds. So organic sugar and dwarf snap pea, one of the vegetables that I want to grow this spring. It's pretty easy to grow, and really no pests. Really gorgeous, gorgeous plant. And pretty flowers, too. Even if you don't get it to set the peas themselves indoors, just having some of those flowers would be kind of fun. Also, Fruition Seeds has a Double Take Cosmos, which is a white cosmos, white to light. Well, it's white, and then going to kind of a lavender purple on the edges of the petals. So this is a double cosmos that has multiple petals, long stems for cut flowers, and they say goldfinches love these seeds on the cosmos. So they describe it as magenta-lined ivory blossoms. So cosmos are one of my favorite annuals to grow, and this allows you to grow a somewhat different one than the common cosmos, which are white or red or pink, and a fairly small number of petals. This one has, I don't know, 25 or 30 petals, and a bunch of them are small petals with sort of larger petals around it. Really cool, 3 to 4 feet, and an annual that it will sometimes seed itself, but you need to kind of let the ground, let the seeds start to grow. If you cultivate the ground a lot, you'll kill a lot of little seedlings that might grow from last year's flowers. But of course you end up with weeds too, so it's a little tricky to figure out which seeds might start this year. Nasturtium often does, quite a few other plants, but but also those weeds get kind of a head start on you. So again, fruitionseeds.com for more information. Today, starting at 10 a.m., not too far away from now, the Birdhouse is going to have their weekly Saturday session with Liz Magnotti, the general manager there, and they're featuring the birds that have been spotted so far this year. Kind of an update on what birders have seen. You should check that out at 10 a.m. this morning on Facebook. The Facebook Live, they'll be doing that. They also do programs often on Tuesday mornings that are live, and you can email questions and or message them with questions. And then they're available on Facebook after the fact, recorded. So, but if you want to put in your two cents of the birds that you've seen this year, you can do that at 10 a.m. this morning at the Birdhouse of their Facebook Live. Also, if you're interested in learning more about birds, the Cornell University, their lab of ornithology, has some cool programs, and they put out a fantastic magazine, really one of the best magazines, organizations that I've seen of any kind. Really a fantastic magazine if you're a member of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. Their website, allaboutbirds.org, they have something called the Bird Academy, and they put out courses in bird identification. One that they've just sent out an email about is duck and waterfowl identification. And this, you sign up to be a part of this virtual course. It's $60, and there are six lessons. There are quizzes. So if you miss the old days of taking quizzes in, you know, high school or college or whatever, you can take some quizzes here. There are five instructional videos, and again, they are really the preeminent birding organization, birding research organization in the country, I think, perhaps in the world. So, again, this is featuring ducks, and the person who created the course, Dr. Kevin McGowan, says, why made this course? It says, ducks and waterfowl are all around us. Are you confident identifying them even when they're on the other side of the pond? Get training in identifying waterfowl fowl from all angles and benefit from strategies like noticing where is the white to take your birding skills to the next level. This course is designed to help you identify ducks, geese, swans, loons, grebes, and more. Each self-paced lesson features a video tutorial followed by exercises and quizzes designed to help you build ID skills. We live in an area where we have an incredible amount of different water sources and areas to view ducks and waterfowl. I mean, it's pretty much wherever you go. You have Lake Ontario, you have the Genesee River, you have the Erie Canal, you have so many streams and rivers and small lakes and ponds. And I mean, we have Montezuma National Wildlife Refuge, some large sanctuaries. We have an astounding number of places to go see waterfowl. It's hard to imagine how you could have more. I mean, it's not tropical climate, so we are limited by our climate, but I don't know how you could have more areas to see waterfowl than we do in our area, in the Finger Lakes. So this is a great way to take advantage of that, and be able to explore ducks and waterfowl. So allaboutbirds.org, you can get more details on it. I may end up doing one or several of these at some point this winter. There have been many times when I've seen ducks and other waterfowl and really wasn't able to identify them. I know a little bit about them, but it's a big world. There are so many different ones just in our area that either live here or migrate through. One of the really cool migrations and waterfowl that you may not have seen are the snow geese that overwinter now on Seneca Lake. Tens of thousands of them, I think, that will sit out in the middle of Seneca Lake overnight and then go to farmers' fields during the day. I've said this before, they look like an iceberg out in Seneca Lake while they're resting on the lake because they stay so close together. You can't tell they're geese. It just looks like an iceberg out there, which doesn't make sense. Seneca Lake would not have an iceberg that big because it looks huge from a distance. Again, there are thousands of birds in this flock. Try and get down to Seneca Lake at some point and see this. I've got to figure out what time in the morning they often leave the lake or what time they return in the afternoon. If I can figure that out, I'll let you know. There's got to be someone who lives on the lake that's posting about this. I just haven't found them yet. If you do, let me know. Email me, michael@saverlife.com. We'll be back with a food show this morning, Discover the Finger Lakes. Tomorrow, it's the grapevine here at 9 a.m. at saverlife.com. Have a great day.